Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. That's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I am in Miami with the team. Padres play their 54th game of the season tonight. The significance of that is it marks the 1/3 point of the season. They are 5 games under 500. Ryan, there's a lot to talk about. I still maintain they're, you know, 1/3 down means there's 2/3 to go. Still maintain that this team could have just as good and obviously could be better second third as they did first third. Of course, it could be worse. It could continue to spiral. Where would you like to start with this team as we advance this Marlins series?
You know, I think I'd like to start first with the new addition and then get into our report card at the third way mark. You had it this yesterday. Padres claimed Gary Sanchez off waivers. Long time Yankee, two-time All-Star with them, has been a guy who can't seem to hit for average lately. We have talked on this show, and we all know that catching has been a major problem for them. What role does Gary Sanchez fit, and whose place does he take?
I'm thinking it's probably going to be a straight platoon. Look, no one on this team can hit for average. One thing they've done over the last 8 games is hit home runs, 2 home runs a game. Padres are leading the majors, average of home runs per game in the last, whatever it is, 9 or 10 days, 8 games span for them. He does have power potential, let's call it. So there's that. It's no secret. Look, he's a well-liked guy, a respected guy. He has been in a big market and has played well. He's not a great catcher. It is what it is. Look, they need offense. That's not to say that they think, oh, Gary Sanchez, who just spent like 5 days with the with the New York Mets, couldn't find a job till April 1st, didn't hit in AAA for the Giants in the Pacific Coast League, is going to be the fix. But like, it's basically this. Mm-hmm. It can't be worse.
Are you having flashbacks to 2019, 2018? I mean, to me, this is the kind of thing that the Padres of my youth did all the time, right? Go grab a guy off the waiver wire, some guy who used to be somebody who, you know, you're taking a flyer on somebody and throwing them into your lineup with hopes of catching some magic. And this can't be the only move they make. In fact, you indicated in your story about Gary Sanchez that this is the first of some tinkering that you expect AJ Preller to do. What happens after this?
Well, I think that, you know, long term, if they're still in it, then they look to address the bullpen. They look to address maybe starting pitching. They could add I want to say a hitter, but I don't know where that person fits other than center field, the obvious, right?
Right.
You do understand, like, that game is over in the third inning if Trent Grisham doesn't rob a home run. There are several instances this year of if someone else was in center field, like, and I mean, when I say someone, I mean almost anyone else, you'd have hits. Some of those hits would have produced runs. Now, look, the reason it's even a possibility, given that you have one of the best center fielders in the game, is the guy can't hit. Look, I've said it a lot of times here, elsewhere. I'm a big Trent Grisham guy. I'm shocked. And I guess that's why I also always say I'm not a scout or a coach. But the Padres are shocked too, right? And there are a lot of scouts and coaches in that organization that thought that Trent Grisham was going to be a lot better than this at the plate. Something has happened. Maybe Trent Grisham needs to change the scenery. I don't know, but there could be a change there. Short term, I don't know that they have anything better. One of my favorite things is folks, be that media, be that fans, suggesting that someone needs to be sent down. Okay. And who replaces him, right?
Yeah. Right. So who's tearing it up at AAA? Is it worth sending somebody down so Taylor Colway can make his major league debut? You know,
who's tearing it up at AAA and what's real at AAA? Yeah. Because there are a couple guys tearing it up, but what's real and what positions do they play? Are you going to put them in center field? Right. So we'll see. But now, if things go bad, there could be some selling happening.
Right.
As a matter of fact, if things go terribly bad, there will be some selling happening.
Right.
And that's like mind blowing that we would be there. Right.
Right. Well, and this dovetails nicely into the story that was posted on the UT's website this morning, was in this morning's Union Tribune. Kevin, you have basically a 14 or 15 point breakdown of what has gone wrong, but you make the note that there's still time. You know, there's 2/3 of the season left. We hit the season's 1/3 mark today. Of all the stats that you throw in there, which one do you think best explains what the hell is wrong with them at this point?
Don't have it in front of me, but it's got to be the Manny section for sure. Yep. Manny's, Xander Bogaerts, those two, how they have hit. Obviously, Manny's missed what is it, 11 games now with the hand fracture. Could come back here most likely. It is sometime during the homestand, maybe even the beginning of the homestand on Friday. Mm-hmm. We'll see. As Bob Melvin pointed out, like it could be a thing where he shows up one of these next 3 days and it's so much better. There's no reason not to activate him. You want to get him back in there, you know, when he can't be, when it's prudent also. But that's it. Like all these other things are real. Like I could have made it a 40 point thing, really. Yeah. I mean, but all these things are real, but it's like, what was the stat I had where Juan Soto, for a while, like people were on him about that he's walking, right? Like walking too much because there weren't enough hits, right? That on base percentage, even if his batting average was down around 250, that 400 on base percentage would have looked a lot better. People would have been a lot more grateful for it if Xander Bogaerts was hitting better than 138 when Juan Soto's on base. It's like 7 for 58. What if he was 15 for 58?
Right. He's 8 for 58 when Soto's been on base. Yeah.
Right.
8 for 58. .238. Yeah.
What if you know, he had 10 more hits there during that time? And some of those were runs, and I can guarantee you that a lot of those were at times that would have been crucial. And the Padres have lost a lot of close games. So just the little things like that where it's like, you know, if Machado, Bogaerts were doing better, and I don't want to discount that Juan had a terrible first month or a really bad first month by the standards of $23 million a year, by the standards of what you gave up to get him and who he's supposed to be. Bad first month. I don't want to discount that Tatis has a 7-something OPS. Now he has 9 home runs in whatever at bats it is. It's one every 15.7 at bats, I think it is. That's great, but like he's also not hitting well in scoring position with runners in scoring position. He is striking out. He is chasing. It's not the Tatis that they need. It's not the Tatis that you know could be here in a month when he gets a little bit more. He goes through these times, and he didn't play for a year. So,
right. One of the things that you point out with Bogaerts, and you know he's talked about this. He's been pretty open about this, but it seems like I've heard more and more about this in the last week. Xander Bogaerts' wrist is not right. It seems. It seems as if he's playing through it and not playing particularly well. Is this the kind of thing where an IL stint would make some sense? Is this the kind of thing big leaguers play through all the time and they just don't talk about
it? I don't know if it's somewhere in between. This is a weird one. Like he has played with it for, this is his 6th season basically playing with it. And you know, the guy's got the numbers, right? Like, and last year's numbers were good. Like, but he went through a long stint last year where this bothered him.
Right.
And so like, and he won't really say what it is. And the Padres kind of won't like say what it is. Like, and it only bothers him after like an incident, like getting hit or running into somebody. Mm-hmm. And like, like he said, like the suggestion is that he takes less batting practice, you know, tries to not use it so much. And that's a challenge because like he wants to be working because he wants to fix himself at the plate. And the challenge is that what you try to do is you try to do things that aren't going to hurt it. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you get into bad habits and then it's just like this cycle. And so like, honestly, it's like a really confusing thing. And all you can say is, well, but he's been playing with it for a long time and done pretty well. So, and he doesn't want to make excuses, though he acknowledges it, and it's obvious that it is bothering him.
Right. It reminds me a little bit of what we saw with Tatis and his shoulder. Not comparing the severity of this at all. But with Tatis' shoulder, you know, you got the feeling.
He led the National League in home runs.
Right. But he he also kind of couldn't let it eat in the batting cages, right? With this spring, the big turning point for him this spring with his wrist was, and his shoulder, was that he could finally take BP and try to fix the things that he thought was wrong. He swung the bat 10,000 times a day or whatever the heck it was, right? Hundreds and hundreds of times a day. That's tricky. If you have the kind of injury where you don't want to practice too much either, that makes it tougher to get out of slumps would be my guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, and like I said, it becomes a cycle. And then also you get into the bad habits, especially if it's something where, I mean, you're human, right? Like, you know that a certain swing is going to hurt. I mean, I don't know how often that happens. It's something that he mentioned, because you would think if it gets to that point, well, you should go on the IL. It's something that he mentioned. You can see that he's struggling. And so it definitely bears mentioning. That said, he said it didn't bother him. And in the 2 weeks leading up to when he said it did start bothering him, just before the Minnesota series, he was actually worse than he's been in the past 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever. So, like, maybe it's been bothering him all year and he's lying because he doesn't want to make excuses. He said he never felt right the whole season in terms of in the box. So I'm not going to put it all on the wrist.
Yeah, it's interesting. Kevin, I have two stats from your story that I think they bear repeating because they're so insane. Of the guys hitting in the 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 spots, only one of them, and I know batting average isn't everything. I know.
But
only one of them is hitting above 215, and that's Ha-Sung Kim. And he's not hitting 325. You know, he's hitting 240, 242.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just, to me, so jarring. And, you know, as much as we've talked about how the big four need to get right if this team's going to make some kind of a run, you need more competence from the five guys behind them in the order, don't you?
You 100%. It's holes that could be masked a little bit if other guys were hitting, and then Cronenworth wasn't in the two spot, and maybe Kim wasn't in the two spot, and you know, things are go differently. Look at Friday's game, and they talked about it before, and Friday was the personification of it. When you have a couple of the big guys going well, it helps everybody. It just does. Okay. Now that's not to say it doesn't matter. I don't want to make too big a deal out of that. The guys at the bottom got a hit. I believe I'm correct on this, that it's Ha-Sung Kim 240 something. It's Cronenworth at 215. I know that. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is in the ones of the guys who have hit in the 5 to 9 spot.
Including the designated hitters whose job presumably is to hit.
Primary guy, Carpenter, it's over the last couple of weeks is in the zeros, as in like 087 batting average. And we could bog it down like, okay, you said average isn't enough. It speaks in this sense. You're not getting the hits that you need. This team is it sixth best in the majors, their on-base percentage when nobody's on base? Like, they walk really well, right? They even walk pretty well when people are on base. They need to get hits with people on base.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I think lost in all this talk about Tatis and Machado and Bogarts, to me at least, is the fact that Jake Cronenworth is struggling as much as he is. I would still say, sort of my 5,000-foot view, that when you say Jake Cronenworth, I go turning into a good/very good defensive first baseman, versatile, gives you a good at, but his numbers aren't good. I mean, he's on pace for a 2.4 WAR, which would be his lowest WAR since his first year with the Padres during the COVID year.
And that was because that would have been a much higher WAR, but, you know, it was 1.8 over 60 games. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. What's the issue there? Is it simply mechanical? Is it, I know you're not a scout, but I mean, this matters to Jake Cronenworth a whole heck of a lot. Is he pressing? Is it mechanical? What do you think?
There are very few people that, that it's as important to. So I think there is a pressing element there. He's even talked about it. Jake Cronenworth is constantly tinkering. Also, I don't know. Does that work? Ask Will Myers. I don't know. It's contagious. Look, he got a 7-year, $80 million contract. That's nice money. That's money that you're going to – that in the future, a 3-WAR player is going to get. I mean, you know, like there's 3-WAR guys that are going to make more than that. So it's 240 with a 340 on base. Jake Cronenworth, and playing first, second. He could slide over and play short. He's going to give you a really good defense. He also is a fairly clutch guy. Not so much this year, but fairly clutch guy. And somehow, through all of his struggles, ends up being in the top three in runs and RBIs. I mean, he finds a way to get stuff done.
Sure. That's a good point. Here's the other day.
The Yankees, not only are they getting hits with runners in scoring position, they scored a run because a guy beat out a double play. Now, I'm not saying – don't read into this. I'm not saying the Padres don't hustle or something like that. But that's something I saw Jake Cronenworth and a couple other guys do a lot last year. The Padres weren't a great hitting team most of the year last year. But they found a way to score runs. That's what Jake Cronenworth brings to this team. He's not a guy who, if you're going to look at the numbers, you're going to get blown away by. I've written it. It's like he's the best bad player, like in terms of all that. And there also then is a reason that like his WAR going into this season was like 18th highest in the major since the start of the 2020 season. And the numbers, like the OPS, those numbers were like way low. But his WAR, because that's a metric that demonstrates, that measures value, total value to a team. And that's Jake Cronenworth. But this year, there just hasn't been enough of that.
Right. No, that's a great point. And well, and Jake Cronenworth, because he focuses on it, right? He's an advanced metrics guy, right? He does the things that makes him valuable. I find him to be an incredibly valuable player, which is why it surprises me. I mean, I know he's never going to hit 300. It surprises me that he's struggling as much as he has, or as much as he is this year. Miami Marlins, Kevin, three-game series before you come home. Third leg of a three-city trip. What do we know about Miami outside of their sweet throwback uniforms? What do we know about the Marlins?
They're hanging in, that's for sure. And I'm not sure how they're doing it. None of their numbers are great. The Padres face Sandy Alcantara tonight. And what is he here? He's got a 4.86 ERA. He's been beaten around a couple times. Now, one start, I think it was against the Phillies back in April, early in the season. It came after, by the way, this guy threw a complete game shutout in 100 pitches in like his third start.
Whoa.
Since then, his ERA is like almost six, but one of those was like a nine-run game against the Phillies. But even since then, it's almost like it's a 4.5 or something. So you would think if they're doing great, oh my gosh, he's going to win another Cy Young. Wow. Nope, not happening. I don't know how they're doing it. It's Skip Schumacher probably. He's just such a great manager. Another guy the Padres let it get away. No, they've got some good hitters. They've got some good pitchers. And the Padres never play well here. It's a dismal place to play. If it weren't for the Padres Dominican contingent, like I don't know if six people would show up to this game. This is one of those places where the Padres sometimes it feels like are the home team, especially if Tatis or Manny do something big. Soto. Now you got Gary Sanchez, you got Nelson Cruz. They're very popular here, but that still only means like 16,000 people. On a night game, and I'd be surprised if it were that high. It's a terrible place to play. That said, like the pitchers they're facing aren't doing great. Tonight it's Weathers, Alcantara, Snell, Braxton Garrett. I watched Braxton Garrett throw he was either shutout or one-run innings here in 2021 as the Padres began their historic slide. But he's got a 4.5 ERA. And on Thursday afternoon, it's Joe Musgrove against Jesus Luzardo, another guy who escaped Oakland like Bob Melvin. These are good pitchers, especially Luzardo and Alcantara, but they're not doing great now. As a matter of fact, like Alcantara has been smacked around by the Reds and the Giants, relatively speaking, when I say smacked around. But I can see it tonight. The Padres score one run and they talk about how good he is. And it's like,
right.
Why are other people hitting all these pitchers?
Right. No, you're absolutely right. The Marlins did one thing, and this has no bearing on this weekend or this three-game series at all. They did something I thought was just gutsy as heck this last offseason. They traded, when was the last time you saw a good for good trade in baseball? Yeah. I mean, they traded Pablo Lopez for Luis Arias, who is the reigning American League batting champion. You don't see reigning batting champions traded very often, by the way. He's been raking. If you like bat on ball stuff, Luis Arias is a fun player to watch.
in San Diego, you should, since we worship at the statue, as we well should. We should definitely appreciate him. Fantastic. I don't compare Hall of Famers to regular players that haven't done it yet. One of my favorite things is calling someone a future Hall of Famer. There is such a massive difference between a future Hall of Famer and a Hall of Famer. But no one's calling Arias that. But he has some very Tony Gwynn-like abilities. And Pablo Lopez is doing well for the Twins. So, good for them. Yeah, there's like I said, there are some good players on the Marlins. They have some good players. Here's the thing. Always have a few good players, some good pitchers, and they don't put it together. We're one third into the season. They seem like the prime kind of team to hang around till the break and then finish, fourth in the American League East. We'll see. Here we are looking at the Padres, who only, I believe, by the virtue of the Diamondbacks winning last night, kept the Padres out of last place in the West.
It's crazy. Marlins are interesting too. They're one of those franchises. It seems like the handful of times when they decide to go for it, it goes horribly for them, right? It's they live kind of in the middle here.
That sounds a lot like what's happening here and happened in 2015. But yes, you're correct. And it's hilarious. I think I've been here actually a couple times when they were celebrating one of their World Series teams, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody shows up for that night. When I say everybody, they end up getting 25,000 instead of 6,000. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's right. They've won two World Series here.
Like, I know.
Now there was 97 and 03, and then just tore it down. And I always wonder, would Padres fans go for that? Like two World Series, like selling your soul to the devil, two World Series championships for horrible ownership for the next 20 years. I'm pretty sure that most people would sign up for that. But then think about living through that hell for 20 years and how long ago 20 years is.
How about this? The Padres' last World Series appearance was 25 years ago this fall. Let's feel old. Let's make ourselves feel old. Kevin, where is Miami on your list of cities to visit for work?
I've told you before, I'm the most boring guy that there is. And I did plan to get out yesterday. And then just as I was finishing my story, Gary Sanchez happens. And that's just life. That's just the way it is. It's a wonderful city. It's a wonderful city. I happen to be staying by the airport. This time there's nothing near the ballpark. I usually do stay by the beach. And that is always awesome. It's such an international city. It's amazing. You could be in your hotel and feel like you are in Buenos Aires in France. It's amazing. It's a very South American and also European and Caribbean city. It's amazing. It's beautiful. Now, it's always humid. Now, it's not bad humid right now. It's 80 something humid. So thank goodness not here in July or August. But it's fantastic. This is a good trip. Washington, New York, Miami. Now, did not do anything in Washington. Got out for one walk near the park in New York and have not done anything here in Miami.
Okay. Well, the week is still young, Kevin. You've got two more days in Miami before you have to make the horrible 6-hour flight home to watch the Padres play the Cubs on Friday.
That's right. Can't wait for that. The Cubs, who were looking pretty good last time they played them, and now you got this is the 4-game wraparound series. This is a Friday to a Monday. You got isn't the marathon on Sunday, so you got a weird start time, and then you've got a Monday night game against the Cubs. It's very interesting. We're getting ahead of ourselves. The Padres starters this series. Look, Ryan Weathers went 6, gave up 4 earned. It was a good start, and you get that out of Ryan Weathers, you should win if you're the Padres. Blake Snell went 5, 1 run. Look, forget that he's making 16 mil. Look, should he be better more consistently? Yes. But you get 5-1 out of Blake Snell, you're the Padres, you should win. Joe Musgrove, 6 1/3, one run? Absolutely. Two of those guys won, one of them lost. Most of the time, you want to talk about the stat that blows my mind that was in there? Yes, the one you had is probably as good as any. But the stat that blows my mind is it now 23 quality starts and they're 12-11? That's unacceptable.
And that is a pace you cannot keep from a starting pitching standpoint throughout the course of a season. It would be statistically the best season they've ever had pitching wise if they kept
Last year they had far more quality starts. Last year was the best starting pitching you could argue in the organization's history based on the number of quality starts, the way that starting pitching's changed. It's not 1998 anymore.
Right.
Like the fact that they had as many quality starts as they had, and I forget what the final number was, but at this point in the season, they had, after 53 games, had 33 quality starts. Wow. That, I mean, they were really pitching well. They've had 23 this year, but the problem is that they're not taking advantage of those. And I'm not talking, it's not like 6-3 all the time. More often than not, it's 6 innings and 1 run, 6 innings and 2 runs, and they are losing those games.
Yeah. Got to hit. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We will see you next time when we will talk Padres returning home and a visit from the Cubs.